Hey, welcome to this episode of Cloud Chronicles. I'm Andy McCaskey from SGR News and joined, of course, by Patrick Bouchard. Good afternoon, Patrick.
Hi, Andy. How are you?
I'm doing well. In a little bit of show prep here, we've got a lot of things to jump right into. And the first item is a news item that's almost not a news item. Explain.
Yeah, so it was interesting. We were promised some really big news out of Oracle, and I don't remember the exact vocabulary used, but it was, you know, terms like massive. So we were all expecting, you know, what's new services or that sort of thing. And the news came down to two parts. One was first with Microsoft around support of Oracle databases on Hyper-V and Azure. And so, you know, that's interesting news, but I'm not sure it's quite the scale that everyone expected given the messaging out of Oracle. I think it's probably a bigger deal for Microsoft in that, you know, now in terms of Hyper-V support, which, as we know, isn't dominating the enterprise, certainly VMware is. But on the Azure side, where, you know, they're really trying to gain acceptance on the infrastructure as a service side, that's pretty big. Right now, customers, you know, right in their wheelhouse, that true big enterprise IT shop can take their Oracle workloads and move them up to Azure and be supported. So that's good news there. And then the second piece of news we heard was around Salesforce and Oracle joining forces a bit in kind of a bit of a multi kind of way. So Oracle, or rather Salesforce, has agreed to incorporate some Oracle technology in their solution stack itself, which is a great feather in the cap for Oracle, I think, especially given the history between the two companies and sort of, you know, some of the disagreements, both kind of on a personal and a business level between the leadership there. And then also there are going to be some sort of co-services offered along, you know, some of the Salesforce services will be offered with Oracle bundles as well. So, you know, I think that one is a much, I don't know about much, but it's a bigger deal, I think, for Oracle than the Microsoft news. And so we'll see how that transpires.
Well, you know, a lot of the questions that come to mind from my point of view, I have to ask a really basic one. Why didn't this occur years ago? I understand there's a tremendous history here.
Yeah, there is. So, you know, back, I guess, somewhere around 2000, there was definitely some, you know, some legitimate beef, I think, in terms of the leadership of both companies. Ellison sat on the board of directors for Salesforce, and there was some disagreements around, you know, competitive technologies there. And to me, you know, that's sort of very business aligned and kind of almost a responsible thing to do if you see some competition, whether it was real or not. You know, everyone can debate that, but if you see some sort of competitive standpoint in terms of the leadership of the company, it's, you know, it's your duty to kind of take care of that. And then, of course, there was a little more dramatic kind of ego-driven stuff with, you know, some keynotes and some people being yanked last minute before they're to deliver a message, that sort of thing. So, you know, it's interesting to see them bury that hatchet a little bit in terms of those differences. And maybe it speaks to how, you know, how struggling Oracle is in some ways to become cloud relevant.
So, who came out on the best end of this deal? Do you think Microsoft is the winner then?
Yeah, on that first announcement, I think Microsoft are the winner as they try to gain acceptance for Azure. Hyper-V is probably less of a big deal if it gains a lot more acceptance than it does, and you know it's trending well. So I don't paint this picture that nobody uses it, but I think you know it's certainly good news on that side in terms of Hyper-V adoption. But I think Azure is probably the big winner there. And then on the other side with Salesforce, I think it's Oracle.
Okay. Well, it kind of brings people in from the cold. Perhaps there's been instances actually running, but now they'll have official Oracle support.
That's right. Yeah, there's no reason you couldn't have run it before, but now you've got support of the vendor, and that's a huge thing, of course, especially on the enterprise side.
Well, our second story here today concerns cloud computing right in the pocketbook and the famous Marks and Sparks from the UK.
Yeah, so, you know, they came out, I think even today, the day we're shooting this, Andy, and talked a little bit about the cost effectiveness as software as a service at large scale. And it was interesting to read. And I think if we look at sort of examples of software we used to traditionally use in the enterprise transitioning to as a service offerings, quite often we don't think about them in that enterprise context. We think about the smaller companies with sort of less demand and less consumption looking for ways to get out of the IT business when that's not their core business, right? If they're a, like if they're a retailer or a manufacturer, IT isn't really all that strategic for them. It's an enabler, and it's certainly important, but you know, standing up your own infrastructure often doesn't make sense. So we see adoption of software service there. But you know, this kind of article or position from Marks and Spencer kind of, you know, makes you reconsider, is this targeted towards the enterprise? And, you know, we see exceptions, of course, in Salesforce. The adoption's massive. But if we look at other software as a service, you know, with things like Zendesk, for example, tools where, you know, you're taking traditional software out of you know, the organization and consuming it as a service, we see that more being adopted by smaller to medium-sized organizations and not the enterprise. And I wonder if cost is one of those, you know, one of those drivers.
Do you think that part of that objection came from the fact that that Marks & Spencer is very highly transaction-oriented? Was that a driver here?
It certainly could be. They weren't really specific in what services they were considering, what they were looking at, and probably for good reason. I'm not sure they'd want to throw them under the bus from a cost perspective. But yeah, I think that's one of the pieces that they called out in the article was around, you know, we run X number of transactions. It was absolutely huge. And, you know, we need support for that at that scale. And obviously they have a growth objective and pattern, and they want to make sure they're supported well into the future too. It's not just about what they do today. So, you know, it's hard to say exactly what software suite they were considering. Maybe it's in the article, but if it is, I missed it in terms of, you know, what software as a service offering they were looking at. But, it, you know, probably reminds us that while Salesforce is doing a great job, they're almost the exception to the rule in terms of the enterprise. When we look at other software as a service, it's maybe not quite as targeted as it could be, both in pricing and in performance.
Well, indeed, from a video encoding standpoint, there are probably half a dozen companies that are offering online video encoding. And I could see if you were a major broadcaster that this might be attractive, but for smaller operations, particularly when you don't have access to pipes that comfortably move gigabit files routinely, it's much less attractive. I mean, who are not so much in that particular situation, but who are the primary targets? Are people zeroing in on the potential customer and exactly what their offering is? Are they well tuned on that?
Yeah, maybe not as good as it could be, and that is a great kind of inverse example where adoption by larger organizations is bigger than smaller, and likely because they've got the infrastructure to do things a little more effectively. Like you say, there's this notion of data gravity where the data must be close to where the processing happens. And video encoding is a great example, right? Just very practically, obviously you can't have your data in one place and have the encoding happening somewhere else, not without a massive, massive pipe to either stream it or to get it there first. So that's a good example, and it reminds us that maybe we should be looking at this on a workload-by-workload basis, right? For someone doing ERP, for someone with a massive database maybe now, how do they get their data to the software as a service provider, right? Is there what does that onboarding process look like? Is it affordable, that sort of thing? There's you know, the question is very multifaceted, but probably should be looked at a workload, kind of by workload basis. I know obviously Salesforce has a lot of great ways to get your data from, you know, whatever system you're using now into it. So it'll sort of, I guess, depend on the application. But I think when you're talking about a retailer, and they're looking at, you know, getting out of the business of managing their own infrastructure, and specifically not going to an infrastructure as a service, but that article called out software as a service. You know, that seems like a much larger challenge.
Well, it kind of reminds me of some of the old jokes surrounding the bandwidth of a FedEx truck, but we'll put that off to the
yeah,
side.
Indeed.
You know, the recurring story we talked about a few weeks ago here, the CIA's use of Amazon turned out that somebody was a sore loser in that exchange.
Yeah, so we talked about that last week around, you know, IBM kind of standing up and say, hey, I don't think we are given fair consideration for this. And there was some sort of regulatory bodies that agreed. So Amazon replied this week saying, you know, we were overbid, you know, by $54 million over IBM, yet we were still selected. And, you know, I think they're kind of waving that sort of feather in their cap saying, you know, even though we were more expensive, we were selected for our expertise in this field. It wasn't really a cost-first decision. It was about capabilities. And For me, I mean, this story is really important in a couple of ways. One, we know IBM plays big in the public sector and government space. For the CIA to look at Amazon over IBM signals to me that they're truly looking for a real agile infrastructure solution, right? They're not so interested in the consulting side that IBM is really good at. They just want a platform that responds on a dime for whatever they need it to do, and they know that nobody can beat Amazon at that game, right? So Amazon's really put the proof in the pudding in terms of their customer base and all the success stories you've heard, the horizontal scalability. I mean, it seems to me that CIA has made a really informed decision. Now, if they need services wrapped around that, then of course, Amazon isn't the leader in services at all. So it'll be interesting to see what the final sort of product looks like once they've got this built. I think the other interesting thing is this is a sort of private cloud. They want Amazon to build it and manage it, but this is not part of, AWS. And this is a little bit against Amazon's mantra of everything belongs to the public cloud, right? I'm sure they haven't said that directly, but that's their message, is that, hey, we're just as good at security as you guys. And I fully believe that. I think that, when a company, their own clear focus is infrastructure all day, 24/7, they have some real core competencies. They're trying to position, saying, we're the clear leaders here, but they're also the clear leader in public cloud, not private. And so this is a bit of a first. It'll be interesting to see if this becomes a service offering that others will take advantage of as well. If Amazon will kind of split their interest between their public platform and instituting and managing private clouds for other organizations. I mean, this is a sizable deal. So, I don't expect that everyone will try to, procure Amazon services this way, but we'll see how it goes.
Okay, on the cloud horizon this week, is there any thing that people should be watching from your point of view?
I don't think so. I mean, this week was a bit of a slow news week. I'm expecting to hear the whole swack of new announcements next week. There was some interesting sort of personal stuff going on. I think there's some news either today or yesterday around, some folks who are very prevalent in the cloud analyst space taking full-time jobs with companies, and that's really interesting. I'm thinking of a few individuals, and maybe we'll report on that. I don't have all the details, so I'd like to hold off on that news maybe until next week. But there's some pretty prevalent cloud pundits who have kind of taken a different path, and we'll talk maybe about them next week when we have more details.
Okay, always good to get caught up on the cloudy news in talking with you, Patrick. Thanks very much. Thanks to you folks for joining us here as well on Cloud Chronicles.